Hello and welcome. This is Heavy Business. I'm Aaliyah.
And I'm Curtis.
And today we have on Naaman Snell of Space Cowboy Music. Am I correct in the company name there? Yes. So before we dive into our detailed questions, would you be so kind as to give a brief summary of who you are and what you do?
Yeah, I am a music supervisor. I work across all different medias, film, television, advertising, video game marketing, theatrical and streaming marketing. Most of my emphasis over the last couple of years, especially through the pandemic and through the strikes and everything, has been more in marketing in the areas that didn't really slow down as much. But yeah, that's me.
And what is it that you do for those markets?
So my role as a music supervisor, I act kind of as the bridge between the client, my client, who, you know, typically a director or producer of whatever project I'm working on, and the studio who they're making the product for, whether it's a Google commercial or an indie film, you know, for an indie studio. And basically my job is to facilitate the really tonally and message wise and everything, what my client is looking to achieve, help them acquire that and be able to use it. So both creative and kind of legally is licensing involved. So helping them deliver musically what they're trying to do in their project for their client, the studio.
Okay, cool. So this podcast is generally targeted towards people who are musicians, independent musicians, particularly in the rock and heavy metal scenes. But I'm wondering, how is it that you usually discover new music? Do artists reach out to you, or do you just discover it through other means day-to-day life?
I mean, really anywhere I can have access to it. I mean, I get literally hundreds of submissions a day from everybody from major labels and publishers to independent artists that I've met and formed relationships over the years, managers, third-party pitching companies, especially in marketing. We get a lot, we're contacted a lot by music libraries as well, and have, you know, tons of submissions there. So yeah, I get pretty much my fill of just about everything via email of my reps and connections every day and just network in general. But I'm also always trying to do things like this to meet new people and hear new music and find it wherever I can. I still enjoy listening to the radio and seeing if some DJ, you know, surprises me with something and I wind up having to like quickly fumble my phone out of my pocket for a quick Shazam or whatever it is. But yeah, for me, it's really anywhere I can get it.
Okay. So since email is one way that you find new music, how should, like, if an artist were to compose a pitch to you for their song, what would be the key points that would make their pitch stand out and make it like me seem relevant at all to you?
There's a few different ways to kind of answer that question. The relevancy for any music supervisor really is find out what types of projects they work on. A lot of music supervisors kind of have different niches that they find themselves in, especially in the TV and film categories. Like a lot of music supervisors will just do dark procedural dramas because that's what they're really good at and that's what people know them for. So that's what they keep getting hired to do. Other people are really great at, like, you know, YA stuff for like the CW, which has also a very specific sound and like breaking new artists and more pop leaning and stuff like that. So find out what, first of all, find, I'll back it up again. First of all, think about your catalog, what you have, what you do really, really well, and where potential uses for that would be. If it's a favorite show, like I have, like you have some dark, moody, broody covers that could be great for like a murder mystery show or film, find out what studio does it, go on IMDb, find out who the music supervisor is or the music department. That stuff is 99% of the time listed. And then kind of in a not creepy way, like stalk them, like figure out what they work on, how long they've been doing certain things, try to get an idea for what they typically work on and approach it that way, because then your pitch is going to be a lot more targeted. As far as the actual email goes, again, try to be specific and like, hey, like loved your work on such and such a project. If you happen to have more stuff like that coming up, would love for you to take a listen to this. I will interject really quick that just a pet peeve of any music supervisor, if anybody uses the term, this song would be perfect, we will most likely delete the email. That is a hot sentence for any of us. And for whatever reason, it just turns off music supervisors immediately, because you don't know what we're working on. You don't know what our client is asking us for. You know, we understand in a lot of ways where you're coming from, what the message of that really is. But just a word of advice would be never use that phrase, because I know some people that like that sends them into a blind rage and they will not even click your link. So there you go on that.
Super good to know. Thank you for that heads up. Super good to know. So what can we say and what should we say?
Well, the next thing I was going to talk about as far as like this rabbit hole goes is the best, one of the easiest ways to get to a music supervisor in general, because we typically don't put our emails out there. You know, we try to keep that stuff pretty private because we don't want hundreds of thousands of people emailing us every day. We would easily lose emails from our actual clients trying to dig through the deluge of emails every day. So my best piece of advice for getting music to a music supervisor would be get yourself a rep. That is first and foremost. Find a rep, because that is going to do a lot of things for you. The rep probably already has relationships with a ton of music supervisors or people at studios or this, that, and the other. They can open a ton of doorways for you. They will put your music in front of us, and we are much more likely to engage with an email from a trusted source, somebody that we know has their metadata buttoned up, has their publishing and master, if need be, splits buttoned up. I don't have, like, because they've already done all this pre-vetting that I then don't have to do, because if some random person reaches out to me, I may hear a song that I love, but I've downloaded it into my iTunes and I heard it. I was working on a pitch. I go to look in the metadata and there's nothing there. I have no idea who sent me this, other than there's probably an email somewhere. I'm not going to try to find it. I don't have time for that. So a rep can help you sidestep a lot of the pitfalls that can happen in the process of trying to get to a music supervisor. And again, it coming from somebody that we already know and have relationships with, whether that's because of an affiliation with a bigger group, like a major label, maybe it's on a sub-label, or a music production house, a music library that we have a relationship with. And we're like, oh, so-and-so, we know that you're buttoned up. We know what you're doing. So yeah, we respect your taste. What do you got? That's an invaluable thing to do. Any time that I ever go to any kind of a conference and people ask me what the best way to get a hold of a music supervisor is, that's the number one answer, is like, get a rep.
Okay, so let's say an artist is an independent artist. They're not even trying to get signed to a label. They want to really do as much as they can themselves. and hire their own people. How do they, how do they go about finding a rep?
There are a lot of places that will do kind of admin deals or non-exclusive deals. There's like, I mean, there's just off the top of my head, there's like, there's Penn Music, P-E-N. There are, I mean, I feel like my brain is short circuiting with trying to think of like all the different people to do this, because there's a bunch out there. Like, you definitely do not need to sign to a major label or a major publisher or anything like that to do it yourself. I literally just licensed a track, finished licensing a track today where there was an independent, you know, writer who had 10% of a song. And I, and you know, there's, I could go on a whole diatribe about that, which I very much, I very much appreciate and enjoy. But as soon as I sent that email, I know the next email I'm going to get back is, do you have a licensing template and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, no, I don't. I'm not a lawyer and I'm not your rep.
Well, what's the term people should Google when they're looking for this rep? What kind of rep is this?
You could do indie label, music production company, third party pitching company or agency. Go down the LinkedIn rabbit hole of a bunch of that kind of stuff. Like, there are really are like any number of them, and it's always like a kind of a choose your own adventure when it comes to kind of who to hook up with and you know, do. Like I said, admin deals where you maintain control, not specifically of either your publishing or your master. If you're already in an agreement with somebody else, there are major publishers like Cobalt that do nothing but admin deals. There's also, like I said, non-exclusives where you can like essentially contract multiple companies to pitch your music, and basically it's a way of like kind of broadening your net and your reach, and basically going, hey, whoever brings me this sync gets the commission fee, you know.
So I had a quick question. Just so when someone's like looking for a rep or someone like that, so what would be kind of the red flags they should be looking for? Because obviously there's a lot of scammers out there. You always hear that someone's a sync agent who isn't really, they work with Sony, they work with whoever. People get pitched us all the time. So what would you say would be the red flags people should be looking out for?
Do your homework. First of all, ask around, ask for references. That's a pretty easy one. And yeah, don't give it to anybody easy or quickly. You know, do kind of your research, like what, you know, what's something that you landed recently, and figure out a way to like kind of research that a little bit. You know, don't ever just take somebody's word for it.
Of course.
Another one would be never sign over your rights to anything. Like, you, especially if we're talking about non-exclusives and admin deals and stuff like that, never, ever, ever sign anything that gives away your control of your work. Because that's still something that like some of the shadier people out there can try to do, which is like very old school record label and publishing stuff, where they'll give you a little bit of money up front, but you know, you then, that is all you will ever see from that song. You know, they don't owe you anything after that. And I've, you know, they should, you, again, there are millions of ways to structure any type of deal, same with any kind of contract. Just never sign anything, your control of anything away. People, you can sign stuff where it's like, you know, never do something where it's like, we'll get something and then, you know, we don't need, you know, you are waiving your right of approval. Always keep your approval. Like, artist approval is big. Like, if they want to use your song in something, they have to come to you, get your permission, and you sign like, oh yeah, that I don't fucking know, toilet paper ad. I want to be involved in a toilet paper ad. Let's go. And then you approve the rights and the fee and all that kind of stuff. And then they can go back, but never agree to anything where you're waiving that power of approval. And then, because then you have no way of ever knowing if they're approving stuff on your, if they're actually getting stuff for you or not and pocketing the money. You
is
have
that
no way.
Common though for that to happen? That seems insane.
It's not common, but okay. Again, scammers, it does happen. And okay. Again, that's one of the reasons why I'm a big proponent of finding doing your research, finding a legit rep, somebody with a track record, with a website where they showcase their work and this, that, and the other, where you can see what they've done, maybe in the world network of stuff, you can check some references of who did you work with on this? And and just do whatever you can to get yourself into a place where you feel comfortable working with whoever you are potentially going to work with.
So I had a question that we haven't really gone over. How did you kind of get involved in doing this yourself?
That is a long story, but
nutshell version.
Yeah. The nutshell version of that story is I kind of stumbled into it. I graduated, years ago, with a double major in psychology and advertising. And my aim was to get into, this was back in the height of the Mad Men craze and all that kind of stuff. And me as a young, impressionable college kid, I was like, I'm going to go be a Don Draper and work in advertising, blah. And I still love advertising. All that stuff is really interesting to me. But there are kind of two paths to get there. It's copy or it's graphic design. I don't have the patience for graphic design. I don't. So I went the copy route, came out to LA. It was the height of the recession. You weren't getting an entry-level job in anything unless you already had 5 years of experience, because that was the market. And, I'd been out here for about a year. I was, getting pretty discouraged. And I went out for drinks with a buddy one night and he goes, all your Midwest education bullshit aside, what would you want to do? And kind of kicked around some ideas. And I was like, I've been involved with and loved music since I was a little kid. Grew up with an uncle who had a local recording studio for all kinds of local artists, jazz primarily, but also a big rock and whatnot contingent. And I was like, so something in music, I love the modern storytelling of TV and film, maybe something there, maybe if there's a way to kind of play around with both. And without missing a beat, he goes, all right, it's called a music supervisor. I don't know any, but I know so-and-so who manages this band. And he probably knows some people because he does a lot of work with labels. So I'm sure I can set up, for you to talk with him. And that just snowballed into informational interviews for months of just asking people everything from music supervisors to label and publishing reps and whatnot. How did you get, what do you do? How did you get into it? Everything that we're talking about here so far. And that eventually led to me getting a cold call essentially from this music supervisor, Eliza Richardson, who has done everything from Friday Night Lights to Parenthood to more recently, the Watchmen series, The Morning Show, Lovecraft Country, some big heavy hitter stuff. She's definitely one of the OG pros of the business. And she kind of cold called me one day and she's like, hey, my buddy told me that you're looking for an internship. You want to start on Monday? And I was like, yeah. And then that kind of started the dominoes falling of working with her in TV and film, worked at Lionsgate for a minute in their TV department, oddly enough, on kind of the tail end of Mad Men stuff, working for an ad, a music house that specialized in ad agency work. So getting involved in ads, And then one day I was out at a mixer with a bunch of like coordinator level and entry level people. And I hit it off with this, this girl, and we got to talking, and she was like, you know, I really like you. I'm putting in my notice. Have you ever thought about getting into the world of like trailer supervision, like theatrical and streaming supervision, for marketing, trailer supervision? And I was like, no. She goes, oh, well, if you're interested, I'm putting in my notice tomorrow and moving back to the East Coast. I'd love to be able to like give my boss your info. And I was
That's awesome.
Wait, somebody who's going to pay me to do this job? Let's go. So, and yeah, I was at that company for 5 years. And then in 2017, I was getting the itch to, well, in 2016, I was getting the itch to get back into like TV and film and kind of working across all the different media areas that I'd worked in at the like up till that point. And so I struck out on my own and started Space Cowboy Music, and now I work for myself, and it's been great.
So, Aaliyah,
and that was the nutshell version.
That's good.
it was great.
Aaliyah, did you have a follow up before I continue on a different tangent?
That's such a confusing way to ask that.
Sorry.
I have another question, but it's not specifically about that.
Go ahead before I.
Okay. I was going to ask you, Naaman, if you would be interested or would you be willing to share any exciting projects you've worked on recently? That's public information, you know, nothing secret, obviously, but and kind of give us a picture of what that project formation looked like.
Of stuff that is out, I mean, you can, the easiest way to do that is to go to my website, spacecowboymusic.com. I have a whole page of all my different stuff that we've worked on and whatnot. Some of the more recent stuff would be the trailer for the trailer for next summer's The Fall Guy, which is Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt. That was a really fun one to get to use kind of through a Hail Mary of Bon Jovi's You Give Love a Bad Name at that one. And we're working on that thing for the better part of a year, and it wound up landing. And I was like, oh, cool. Great. Some other stuff is I do a lot of work with Epic Games and Fortnite specifically. So you'll see a bunch of stuff on my website of like Fortnite spots, Epic Games, like general, like this is what we have coming spots. What would be some
what
other
about stuff? This Fargo?
Fargo, yeah, that was a fun one. I do a fair bit with the folks over at FX, and that's always really fun projects to be on. Fargo, Nick Waterhouse had a really fun, you know, I've never, to my everlasting shame, I'm told, I have never watched Fargo. It looks hilarious and something that would be like right up my alley. I have a almost 3-year-old. I don't watch anything. He goes to bed and I collapse and like play video games or something because I need to turn my brain off.
Totally.
Fargo was a really fun one. I mean, you're going to make me look at my website just because my brain has ceased to function. That's one of those questions. Like that question is like, what are some finishes you've gotten recently? That question and what are you listening to are like the surefire ways to just like short my brain out.
Well, just pick one and tell us the story of how you connected on the project, how you chose the music that you chose, the kind of story behind the project is what I'm interested in hearing. Like, how does your brain work and how do you make those decisions?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now to see. All right, here's one. Here's a fun one. I did the announcement piece for Microsoft's acquisition of Activision, Blizzard, and King. And that was a really interesting one because I was contacted by an agency that I do just a lot of work with in the video game marketing specific space. And they were like, you know, at the time they were like, you know, this is the project. This is the only time we're going to tell you what the project is because it's super confidential, super NDA. It's tied up in like this, that acquisition was in like, I remember hearing about that acquisition like 2-3 years ago that they were trying to make that happen. And it was tied up in all kinds of crazy, like antitrust stuff and whatnot. But they contacted me and they're like, all right, it looks like it's finally going through. It's finally going to happen. We need to have an announcement piece ready for when this goes. And we want to make a splash with it. We want to get people talking. And I'm a big fan of doing like what's called counterpoint, which is you have picture that you stereotypically, like what type of music would you generally think would go on an announcement piece for something like that, where you're showcasing some big acquisition and you're just throwing a bunch of IPs in people's faces and showing off like, yeah, now we control Call of Duty and this and that and the other, you know, and wrapping it all up in like the bow of like, we're Xbox. Hell yeah. You would expect something with like a lot more energy and punch and like just come out of the gate swinging, a bunch of swagger. And I'd been holding on to this remix of Oh What a Beautiful Morning from Oklahoma, where a really cool remixer had like, you know, redone the track into this big ethereal spacey, you know, almost like post-rock meets I don't know how to describe it, just like big soaring ethereal vibes, just creating a lot of expanse and space in the song, and you know, getting it to a place where it's like, you know, it's like almost room shattering wall of sound type of stuff. If you listen to it as I do, very, very loudly. And it's such a unique use of that track. It always kind of like stuck out in my mind. Also, like it's a track from a musical. Like those get used very, very rarely. And they're always, it always kind of makes people go, oh, wait, what was that? I know that from somewhere. That's a musical.
Right.
Yeah.
So it ticks that nostalgia button, mm-hmm. You know.
And it's obviously a very widely known, even if all you know of the song is the, oh, what a beautiful morning, like that sticks in your brain throughout most, you know, generations of demographics of audiences. Most people know that song, or at least that riff. So I thought it was just a really interesting way to kind of like I said, like stick in people's minds. And I pitched the idea along. They wanted a bunch of like other like more expected ideas, some more out of the box stuff. And I threw that one in there and I kind of highlighted it for my client. I was just like, hey, like this could be really interesting. And thankfully they loved it. Cause I mean, a whole rabbit hole of like, how does a song get placed? Conversation we could have. It shot through approvals really fast. The only thing that we kind of got bogged down on was, it wasn't until when we started the conversation, it was the whole, oh, money's no object, go crazy. And then when it came down to they selected the track, it was, oh wait, we only have this amount of money. It's like, you sons of
liars.
So yeah, it just, the licensing process of that got a little hairy, but I, again, get a rep. I had some amazing reps on the publishing side that I was working with on that one that like absolutely helped me haul that mostly dead carcass across the finish line.
Okay, you said this is a long rabbit trail, but can you give us a nutshell version of how does a song get placed?
It really comes down to kind of what I was alluding to earlier with like, you know, knowing where your music could potentially fit as far as uses go. Like, you know, you pay attention to what brands or shows or films are, what they're using, and kind of approach it that way, because that's kind of step one, is finding where you're going to give your music the best shot to get placed. Get it to, you know, then it comes to the music supervisor. We'll go through the most kind of linear way that this works. It comes to the music supervisor, or maybe the, you know, maybe the showrunner or the director or somebody has heard it and they really like it. Somebody has to like the track. Then it goes to, we'll come at it from the angle of the music supervisor. Again, like keep it a little more linear. Music supervisor gets it, really likes it, looks for a project for it, which could take who knows how long, finds something that they can pitch it for. You know, they put it up with, you know, a few other options to like their client. We'll take the marketing route. I give it to my client, typically like a producer, editor team. I've got to get the editor excited about it because they're the ones cutting it into the spot. We have to then get the producer excited about it because they're the ones that's going to put it forward to their client at the agent, at the, you know, the brand, the studio, whoever. Going to give it. So then we as a team give it to the client at the studio. Client at the studio likes it. They get it through their boss because they're usually working on somebody's team. Their boss likes it. They take it to the room of the almighty room of decision makers at like the studio, again, like the studio, the agency, something, something, something. They then, let's say nobody in that room poo-poos the idea. Then it goes to typically the filmmaker, or, you know, I guess I'm going down like the trailer route. So we'll stick with that route. Then it goes to the filmmaker. If the filmmaker signs off on it, everybody's happy. The world sees it. Anywhere along that line, somebody can go, well, but my six-year-old daughter really likes this. Then it all gets kicked back down to the music supervisor, editor, producer team, and we have to come up with something else. That's so, especially in the theatrical, in the trailer marketing world, it's a long ladder of who to get through to get a song across the finish line. It's a little more streamlined in TV and film because a music supervisor in TV and film is typically working directly with the actual decision makers of the producer, director that's making the film or show. You get them excited about it, as long as, you know, you're not blowing the budget or someone's able to get more money somewhere, you can, it winds up in the film or show. It, you know, for all the different media areas, there's so many different nuances of how a song gets used. As far as really all you can do as an artist, in my opinion, is focus on your music, focus on making it the best you want it to be for whatever your aim is. If you're an artist, that's your sole goal is to be an artist and tour and do this, that, and the other. Focus on that. Focus on reaching your audience, building your base, touring, getting your music out there however you can. All that kind of stuff is all part of it, but it starts with putting out good music. If you want to write specifically for sync, like there are, I'm sure, a ton of people that'll watch or listen to this. If your goal is to make money in sync, write that way. Find like again, back to pick your shots, know what you're good at, what your sound would be good for, and write stuff that is aimed at that, whether it's you know, Fortnite marketing has a very specific sound. Again, music for, you know, thrillers have a particular sound. You know, like pick your lane, know what you're good at, and kind of follow that, and you know, be deliberate is what I'm, that's the word I was looking for. Take deliberate shots. Educated, deliberate shots.
I just wanted to know, so, because it seems like a bit of a long approval process to get a song actually placed. So does it ever happen where the filmmaker or the TV show or whatever, they come to you like that, I want a specific song, mm-hmm. and then you have to find it? And how does that work in comparison to what you just said in reverse?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little more straightforward that way. And first of all, it depends on who's asking, again, and what media and all that kind of stuff. But if the client is coming to me asking for a specific song, it's like, oh, we want to use this in this Google ad. I'm like, great. Let me find, you know, who has the master, who has the publishing, make sure everybody has their splits in order. Okay, what rights do we need? What money do we have? Then again, go back to the labels and publishers. Okay, this is, I need a quote. If I'm told the budget ahead of time, I'll always tell people like, hey, this is the money I have. These are the rights I need. Can we use your song? And that's kind of the easiest conversation to have. It's like, do you want money or not?
Yep.
Here it is. We want to do this.
So, just to clarify one thing on this. So, like, let's say you're told by the production that they want a specific type of song. So, is that a similar process? And it's like, I want this exact song type of thing. Like, what is your role at that point? Do you then go hunt looking for different? Okay.
Yeah, that's where it comes in. Where it's like, you know, we're working on this project. We want this kind of music, or we like this song, but we don't want to use this song. We need stuff like it. Then it gets into the whole weeds where it's my job to be like, cool, what do we have for budget? What are the rights we're looking for? Do you want something recognizable? Do you care if it's recognizable or not? Do you, like, all these, this whole laundry list of questions that I need to ask the client to get that whittled down so that then I know who to go out to when I'm looking for stuff. It's like, can I go to a major label because they want Kendrick Lamar level stuff?
Yeah.
Or do they want Kendrick Lamar, but there's no way in hell they can afford Kendrick Lamar. They have $20,000.
Yeah.
I need to go to a company that specializes in sync music, and they write stuff all day that sounds in that world of like aggressive, swaggery attitude, fun, you know, buzzword. You know, that's where my network and relationships come in of like, now I know what I'm looking for. Let me go get it. Here's a bunch of stuff. Anything tickle your fancy? Like, let's go get approvals.
Interesting. I was kind of wondering if it'd be a little bit more difficult because they couldn't really describe what they wanted, but it was like, I want something exciting, but it's like, what do you mean?
Oh, the amount of times that I've had to tell clients, fun isn't a direction. Like, what do you want? Something fun. Cool. What does that mean?
That's like, okay, so you mentioned you don't have the patience for graphic design. I'm a graphic designer. And the equivalent of that for us is, can you jazz it up a little?
Yeah, it's like, I was recently talking to somebody, and one of a direction that they apparently get quite often is just make it a vibe. Like, I got a vibe.
Yikes.
You got a tough job, dude. That's all I got to say on that.
Oh, 90% of our job is playing a psychologist.
Sure.
The other 10 is psychiatry.
Well, at least you got that degree too, right?
I'm well prepared.
So I know we're running out of time, but I do have one other thing I wanted to just cover briefly. Sure. Just
wrap us up, Curtis.
Oh, I got the wrap up question.
Bring it home.
Ooh, now I'm under pressure here. Well, basically what I wanted to find out is like, okay, so you said there's not a lot of hard rock and metal that get placements. You said that's pretty tough. So can you give some examples maybe of like how a rock or a hard rock or metal artist could break into this area instead of like that, just that they can't? Because if it's happened, it's happened, right? So there has to be a way. So in your mind, what would be the best advice could you give someone in our audience of how to break into film, video game, all the rest of it?
Again, I think it's about just paying attention to how that type of music is being used and where it's being used. TV and film, I think there's a little more wiggle room there because there's always scenes. Fair. Like there's so many different types of scenes where rock, metal, something could be used. In marketing, it is admittedly much harder, especially for metal or heavier rock. But by the same token, Turnstile was just used in a Taco Bell campaign.
That's right.
I don't know why this came to mind, but Secret Life of Pets. There was a trailer where at the end of the trailer, there's a poodle that when their master leaves, you know, their super expensive penthouse in New York, the poodle hits the radio and it's, you know, death metal. Oh. And, you know, it was hilarious and awesome and a great little moment. The opportunities are out there in marketing. It's just much more limited. My advice would be, if you are targeting marketing specifically, again, listen to how that type of music is being used in marketing, where it's being used, and what can you do to your sound if, again, you are targeting something like that to make it more friendly to a use like that. Like swag rock is still a big thing, but the era of like the stomp clap is like fading a little bit. Like there will always be the stomp clap. If you're a stomp clap artist, don't worry. That's never fully going away. Much like covers is never going away. But what can you do to harness a similar type of attitude and energy that is you always needed in promotional marketing, whether it's ads, trailers, streaming, whatever, video games, and how can you kind of emulate that but make it your own and make it palatable to a brand? I'm working on a project right now where a reference was make it Mad Max meets Queens of the Stone Age, and I'm like, cool, I know people that can do that. So I reached out to somebody and had something created. So, you know, there are definitely avenues. It admittedly is going to be a little trickier to find them if you're trying to stay like pure, like hard rock metal with it. But if you can adapt and manipulate what you're trying to do, again, purely in the service of getting sync, again, educated, deliberate shots.
Is it worth it to do that, in your opinion, for the artist?
It depends on what the goal of the artist is. Like, I mean, sync is an absolute crapshoot. But, you know, just because, again, from the different layers of approvals that I was talking about earlier, like, you know, I know people that are very talented artists that have, like, been going at it for a long time who don't do all that well in sync, but they find other avenues, like, you know, speaking of video games, like composition, like, you know, scoring a video game. Maybe there's an avenue there. I mean, look at like cyberpunk and like different racing games, which tend to use a little heavier stuff, or fighting games, you know. Again, there are avenues. You just have to be able to, you know, figure out where they are, and pay attention to what they're already doing and how you can fit into that area, and then go find the people that are making that happen via, you know, LinkedIn, IMDb, you know, what have you. It's back to your original question. Yeah, it's worth it if that's what you want to do, you know, but you can't, it's one of those things you kind of can't half ass it. You have to whole ass it.
So quick follow-up to that. And maybe you can't give us maybe a ballpark estimate. Like, if you're selling your soul for commercial success here, what is the ballpark range of a sync licensing for a single placement that you've seen, like, on average?
It depends on what the project is. I mean,
what's the lowest budget you've had to find a sync license for?
$250.
Really?
Yeah. Sorry, the lowest is actually gratis.
Fair.
Yeah. I have had to do
gratis licenses before.
Well, wait. I know.
The 250 was like, it was, that's a little dramatic. That was for like that was basically like coming out of somebody's pocket, and they were trying to like promote like an indie thing that they were doing and blah, blah. I would say on average, the kind of stuff that I see for marketing, I mean, it can go as low as like, you know, library fees are like 500 to a couple thousand, on up to, you know, I'll do kind of like more indie level stuff where it's like, we want, you know, we don't want library music. We want like a sync song, you know. We don't necessarily want a big artist song, but we want a sync song, but all we have is $10,000. Up to, you know, there's different, like, I would say a lot of like brand stuff that I'm seeing, you know, if it's not like a big name artist, it's in the like 20 to 50 range, maybe somewhere in there. And then, I mean, once you get kind of above that, you're getting into like the, you know, 50 to 100, and that area is kind of like, you know, maybe sync artists who have had a lot of success in sync, and they've tapped into a sound that is very desirable, and they have like a pedigree to back it up of sync. And they're like, yeah, if you want like my new track, it's, you know, it's 40,000 aside, so $80,000. You know, and you'll see stuff kind of swirling around in that ballpark. And then anything like over 100, that's where you're getting into like, they want something with some street cred. They want something that people are going to recognize, you know.
It's like a famous artist type thing.
Yeah. Some level of recognizability. And then the money goes up exponentially from there based on the level of the song, the level of the artist, you know, all that, the name recognition, all that kind of stuff. Like, you know, the sky is the limit on that end of things.
I had one quick final question, I hope. How often is it that you get asked to, or they have to get artists to do freebies then just to get into sync? Is that common then?
It's not very common. Okay. Like most music supervisors will kind of draw a line of like, hey, music's not free. Like, you gotta get something.
Yeah, like, I was curious.
Gratis stuff will usually happen if it's like, I mean, at least in my experience, if it's like in film for like a super indie where they're literally like, we have $0.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Like, we like your song. Would you like at least for festival rights, would you let us like use your song? And then if the film sells and we have a budget, we can renegotiate, blah, blah, blah.
That makes
sense. There's stuff like that. Or if it's like for like a cause or something where it's like, it's for an like a small organization. We're trying to, you know, do something for, you know, save the kittens or something.
Yeah.
It's like, can you let us use your song to save the kittens?
But like Microsoft isn't usually going to come up and say, give me a free song and for exposure or something like that type of thing.
No.
Okay.
Cool. No. In a lot of ways, the mentality has kind of gone away of like, oh, it's a privilege for us to use your.
That's what I was wondering. Yeah.
Our thing you know, it's going to blow your career up. And it's like, but have you seen what people have been able to do with SoundCloud and social
media,
TikTok? Yeah. And you know, we don't need your exposure anymore.
Okay. That was what I was mainly curious about. So
like, well, it never hurts.
Yeah.
But the argument of like, we're going to make your career is a little, it's a little watered down.
Cool. I think I have asked my final question now. I'm sorry.
Well, no apologies, because we actually need to wrap things up.
Yep.
Thank you so much, Naaman, for coming on here. I think we've got so much interesting information. So yes, thanks for coming on here. And everyone listening, thank you for listening. And until next time, make like a bull and throw those horns up.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please help spread the word by following or subscribing to us, recommending it to your friends, or leaving us a review on your platform of choice. Thank you for listening to Heavy Business, brought to you by C-Squared Music.